What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 47, Fight Evil with Evil, alongside my evil co-host, Dave. I'm Evil Ryan.
I'm Dave.
He's Dave. I can drop the evil. He's not.
It's assumed.
Okay. It's assumed that he's evil. It's also assumed that it's the top of the episode, which means I'll hit you with a tagline. This week, it is Fight Evil with Evil. If you think you know what that tagline is, it is a movie that we talked a little bit about last week. I think there is a sequel, fixing to be another one. That's your hint.
We talked trailer of it last week.
Yeah, we did.
Of the threequel.
Threequel, sure. Yeah. The third in the trilogy. I don't know where it fell on our trailers. I was disappointed there was no Katie Sackhoff in the trailer. So there's like three or four hints. Go back, listen to our news episode last week. Skip to the end if you're just interested in figuring out what the tagline is. When you come up with your guess, send it off to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com, or you can tweet your answer directly at Dave at moviesonup, or leave it somewhere on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct, if we pick you, we will send you off a Movies On Up gift package.
And you can find all of those links at the newly redesigned moviesonup.com.
I was going to get into that, but yeah, let's just do it now. The hell with it. Dave spent, I don't know how much time. Hours.
A good half hour. 20 okay. minutes.
27 minutes over under redoing our website. I think it looks pretty neat. We got some artwork
from James Cole.
Thank you. I think it looks pretty cool, James. I appreciate it. Our last artwork from Morgan. Very good, too. We're going to keep them both. And what I think I'm going to do is maybe I still have pins with Morgan's artwork. Maybe we'll put James's artwork on some stickers and put those in the prize pack as well, so you can get, I think they're both really, really cool, and I want to use both of them because I still like them. So that's how we'll do it. We'll go half and half, right?
That's fine.
Sure. the motion carries, I guess. So yeah, if you get our tagline contest correct this week, if you can figure out what Fight Evil with Evil is, maybe you can have artwork from Morgan and James to adorn your person, and that would be pretty sweet. Not so sweet this week was the box office for The Host, right? I think it was maybe underperformed what I thought it was going to do.
I set the over-under at 15.
Okay.
Because I didn't think
I took the over, right?
You took the over on it. It came in sixth place at 10.6.
Yeah.
Disappointing from the studio standpoint. But again, that one's on a $40 million budget. So it's not the epic disaster that, I mean, it might be, but it's going to get up there into that 20-30 range. It might get back there, and then who knows what it'll do overseas, but it's not Beautiful Creatures or whatever that one was called. That was an epic bomb. There was a lot of money at the box office. I questioned whether there would be. Oz the Great and Powerful in fifth with 11.7. It's going to cross $200 million by Wednesday or Thursday this week. So it's still holding strong, but you figure the top six movies all made over $10 million. Olympus Has Fallen fell down from second to fourth place in its second weekend with $14 million. It's sitting at $55 million after 2 weeks on a $70 million budget. This is the interesting one. Tyler Perry's Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor. I set the over-under at 50 or 15. I said his usually average around 20 to 23 million, $21.6 million for this. This is Tyler Perry's ninth opening of $20+ million. You know how many other directors have at least nine $20+ million?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say zero.
Two.
Two, okay.
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
And the other one I don't think you would ever guess because it's kind of a curveball. It makes sense when you hear it, but I don't think you'd ever guess it. Zemeckis. I never would have guessed them.
But then I hear it,
and it's like, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, okay, I can see that, sure.
So three directors ever, nine $20 million openings. So Tyler Perry now has more $20 million openings than
anybody else.
Than Coen Brothers,
yeah.
Ang Lee.
Quentin Tarantino.
I'm thinking combined.
Oh, you're thinking combined, okay.
It's the Coen Brothers, Ang Lee, Scorsese. And there's at least one more that fits in there.
Jeez.
That they don't even have nine. The Croods was in second place with $26.7 million. So it's at $88.8 million after 2 weeks. It'll hit 100 early next week. or over the weekend, I mean. And then number one.
With a bullet.
I set it over under at 50, and I said we'd count Thursday. $51.008 million for G.I. Joe Retaliation. Strong enough for it to already be green lighting a third one. Bruce Willis's biggest opening ever.
Wow.
Yeah. So they got a hit.
Think about that.
Yeah. And word of mouth seems to be carrying it okay. I mean, it's people are into it, so, you know, it'll probably hold fairly well, especially because the wides next week are kind of a different audience. So,
and I think maybe there were some people that might have wanted to see that but stayed away because of either that maybe they saw the first one and knew how bad it was, or they just heard how bad it was and said, I'm not going to get burned with this one. But yeah, you might see some more people once the word of mouth gets out that, ah, oh, this isn't as bad as you think it's going to be. It's more enjoyable than that Die Hard movie you sat through about a month ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of want to see it.
I do too. And I wanted to see it before we started our episode on the first G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, which you can check out on our brandly new redesigned moviesonup.com. It is from our second episode last week. We really give you the ins and the outs.
We talk about G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra a lot.
Yeah.
In 19th place this week, Place Beyond the Pines, the Bradley Cooper, Ryan Gosling movie. It only opened on 4 screens. The movie that came in 20th place, 977 screens.
Wow.
Everything else was 300 plus. I mean, most of them are 700 plus. 4 screens, $279,000. So that's a $69,800 per screen average, which is impressive.
There's a lot of handsome in that movie. Yeah. I mean, whatever city it was in, that would have been the place. Like, if you want to get a target-rich environment, would be to go to a theater to see the Place Beyond the Pines.
And I think it's supposed to expand this week, but I can't find the numbers.
I hope it does. I'm going to just lurk.
I want to see it.
I'm going to lurk in those theaters.
I really want to see it.
I'm going to wait right outside the door and be like, hey, my name's Ryan. What's up?
Yeah, and then the Shining documentary, Room 237, brought in $36,000 on 2 screens for an $18,000. So that's pretty respectable also. But yeah, so I mean, there was a lot of money at the box office this week.
When you set the over-unders, and I pretty much took the over on everything,
were right, 2 of the 3.
Well, yeah, but I think that was your point, was do you really think that there's going to be that much money that gets spent? Because I think I had myself committed to about $80 million, maybe even more than that.
Plus the Croods you knew was going to do well.
Right, and I did feel like there would be some money there. And for the most part, I think the movies came through. I was still surprised that The Host didn't do better just because of the association with...
See, I don't feel any surprises because it wasn't... Like, G.I. Joe Retaliation, I knew would do well.
Yeah.
I guessed right about 50. It was...
I think you guessed really right on...
I think anywhere in the 40 to 60 would have been expected.
Yeah.
Croods, you knew, was going to still hold strong and do second. Tyler Perry, that was the question mark. Like... Said he averages 20 to 23 million, and I didn't know if his audience is dwindling or something more serious is going to turn him off, especially over Easter weekend. Do you want to go see an adultery movie? Yes, apparently.
I guess so. If it's done by Tyler Perry.
Yeah, and then The Host, it doesn't feel like it's being pumped up as much as you would expect it to, trying to bounce off of Twilight. It didn't feel like a confidently released movie.
Well, maybe you said the budget was $40 million on that.
Yeah.
And doing what they did, they made a quarter of that. So maybe the thought was, why put a bunch into the marketing? Because we know we're going to get X by doing the least we can do. So why spend more? You know what I mean?
Yeah, just but you're not going to sit there. It's not going to hold for long because you're getting in. We're 4 weeks removed from summer kicking off. It's not like it's going to sit there in that fifth and sixth spot for 3 weeks.
But I guess it doesn't need to. $40 million, it made 10 domestically. I mean, you hit it right on the head. You know, it's going to make some money worldwide, too. It only needs to make $41 million for everybody to have made their money and turned a profit. So
kind of.
Yeah, it's pretty close. And it looks like we're getting closer to escaping to New York via Great Britain. Despite the original Snake Plissken, Kurt Russell's insistence that the reboot of Escape from New York cast an American as Snake, America, Tom Hardy and Jason Statham are the first two names rumored to be in the mix for the lead. Neither of those gentlemen hails from the good old US of A. The reboot is being set up by Joel Silver as a new trilogy.
I love Statham. I don't see him in this role. Statham makes it a completely different movie because I like him, but it just turns into a Death Race type movie with him. Hardy, I think, would do awesome, but I don't think he'd do it with Mad Max. Also,
that's a lot of post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and he's at the point now where he can pick anything he wants. So he can, he's in a position he can turn down a franchise because he's also got, what is it, Splinter Cell? That's a potential franchise coming out. So, I mean, I'd be okay with the reboot if it's done well. Although I'd rather just do a prequel almost, like, and set it up that way. What was it, Escape from Cleveland?
Yeah, sure. As many times as it gets referenced, I mean, you kind of feel like you want to know the story behind that. I think a prequel would be interesting. I also wouldn't be, I don't think I'd be completely turned off if they would do another sequel. I know they want to reboot it, so you can't bring Russell back, but I wouldn't be terribly distraught if they did bring him back.
So why not bring him back as Snake Plissken and then cast either Statham or Tom Hardy as Mutt Plissken?
Why do we have to do those two? Why can't we just get Shia and just have him come in and mess up that franchise as well? MGM looking to raid the tombs in search of a hit that is not a reference to Raiders of the Lost Ark. I guess you could make that leap coming from our Shia LaBeouf reference, but MGM has recently acquired the film rights to the popular franchise from GK Films, who secured the rights themselves in 2011. The two companies will work together and try to fast-track a reboot to ride off the success of the recent video game release. It is the Tomb Raider video game release.
I think there's still an audience there. Even if it has nothing to do with the games, like even I think that character is iconic enough that you're going to get an people that don't play video games know Lara Croft.
Sure.
If you take the approach of it's not just a hot chicken short shorts and a tight tank top, if you have that but also try to make it a movie, I think there's potential there. If you make it feel more like Indiana Jones.
I think that's the thing, is she was supposed to be, Lara Croft was supposed to be a female version of Indiana Jones. The Uncharted movie is very similar, or at least the games are very similar to that feeling of a Raiders. And I think people would be interested. They would make great action movies. I think doing the Angelina Jolie thing last time did kind of set them up to go in a particular direction, and I would be okay if they took definitely a lesser name.
Like if they took maybe an unknown or a lesser known,
sure,
and didn't build it as, oh, here's Angelina Jolie as Lara Croft.
Right.
Because you're expecting Angelina Jolie. If you get Lara Croft, okay. But if you're expecting Lara Croft and you have to deliver, I think it could be good. And I mean, I've toyed with the idea of doing like a list of stuff that needs rebooted. Tomb Raider's always been at the top of my list. I think it could be good. I mean, there's a market for movies like this. The National Treasure movies, I think, are pretty terrible. They did very, very well. People liked them. So I think that if you take that character, I think there's a lot of room for a lot of money to be made there if it's done right.
Yeah, I think that's the key. The game, even the games have kind of suffered until this recent reboot. So, you know, being able to reboot the video game franchise would lead you to think that they could reboot the movies as well. Along a similar vein, they didn't take in the game, they didn't just say, "Okay, she's going to be a hot chick with short shorts and a tank top." It was more kind of realistic, darker, I guess you might say, more so than the goth Lara Croft that they tried to do on PS2. But yeah, if they would just do something like that, make it less video gamey, a less video gamey looking actress, and went more for realism.
Yeah.
Speaking of realism, trying to bring someone back from the dead. Sure, Forrest Whitaker is attempting to bring Richard Pryor back to life. Whitaker is working with Pryor's widow, Jennifer Pryor, in his latest effort to bring the comic's life to the big screen.
For about 20 years now, people have been trying to get a Richard Pryor biopic. Scorsese was attached when Pryor was still alive, with Damon Wayans attached. The most recent, Bill Condon, until he signed on to do the last two Twilight movies, was doing one with Marlon Wayans attached. But in between there, there were actors like Eddie Griffin. And I mean, there's
Keenan Ivory Wayans.
There's a Sean lot of Wayans. It's been an ongoing thing. I think he's an awesome story.
Yeah.
I think Richard Pryor is a fantastic story. I want it to happen. I mean, this now, Marlon Wayans still might be in the running, but there's talk of Michael B. Jordan from Chronicle and the film that Whitaker just produced maybe being in it. I think there's an awesome story to be told there. And the fact that he's working with the widow to try to get a good story,
to get it as truthful as possible. I kind of feel like I would love to see this with Jamie Foxx.
Maybe.
I feel like he'd do a good job. I don't know if I'm just...
I honestly think Marlon Wayans would do a good job. I really do, for that kind of role. I know our last image is G.I. Joe.
Sure.
But you take him in Requiem. He's got the chops.
Exactly. That's what I started thinking about.
There was some leaked screen tests from when it was going forward with Condon, and he did really well. And I think it's the kind of movie that you're not going to get, you know, half-effort Marlon Wayans. Like, sure. I think he's going to think, like, this is it, and this would make people look at Marlon Wayans completely different. And I think he would bring it. And I think he'd be an okay choice. I'm not saying he's number one choice, but I think he could do it if given the opportunity.
Is there somebody that immediately springs to your mind?
Because even that Michael Jordan name comes out there, and I don't see him. Even somebody younger like a Brandon T. Jackson, who's got the comedic chops and is actually a talented actor, I don't really see him in it.
It's such an iconic figure. It'd be like trying to cast George Carlin or something like that. Would be pretty rough.
And I mean, there was a time when Chris Rock wanted his name thrown in there too, and Chris Rock can't act for crap, but no. I'm not opposed to getting an... It's easier to go from comedy to drama, so if they get a comedian to do it, I'm fine with that than go vice versa. Because if you get the best actor in the world, I don't know if they can pull off the stand-up. So it's... That's where it's a tough role to cast because you not only have to land the acting part, you have to be believable as one of the greatest stand-ups of the last 30 years. So, and one of the biggest movie stars. So, I mean, it's a tough one. I like Forrest Whitaker. I think he's got an eye for talent. I think he's got the ability. I think with him producing it, like I said, working with the widow, I hope that something happens here because it's... So many times the ball's been rolling and then it just blows up in their face.
That's terrible.
I couldn't stop myself.
No, I'm glad you did it though. Was that Live from the Sunset Strip? It tells that story.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That should be a watch this of the week. Actually, that might be my watch this of the week. I don't know what I have later, but I'm canon. I'm making an executive decision right now. If you haven't seen that, you should because it is stellar. Surfer Dude may go interstellar. Matthew McConaughey has been offered the lead in Christopher Nolan's time-traveling follow-up to the Dark Knight trilogy.
It just goes back to the year that Matthew McConaughey had.
And is continuing to have.
Like, he got pigeonholed into these romantic comedies for so long. And then Lincoln Lawyer, he kind of started to turn. But then the movies he took last year, Killer Joe, Magic Mike.
Sure.
And then... the Mike Nichols movie.
The one where he lost a bunch of weight.
I'm blanking on the name, but Mud.
And then Paperboy. Yeah. Throw that one in there, too.
He's on a tear.
Yeah.
Like, so when Nolan comes knocking, how do you say no, really?
I don't think I would, especially for the paycheck that I'm sure he'd probably get quite a bit of money for that. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he doesn't quite have time. That would be the only thing, because he has been a pretty busy dude lately. Maybe he just doesn't have room in his schedule. Do we have room for two more Griswolds? Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo in talks to take one more family vacation with the new Mr. and Mrs. Griswold. That, of course, would be Ed Helms and Christina Applegate. Almost completely on board for the requel. What are we calling it?
A reboot sequel? Requel? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't like it. I think let them establish a new franchise. Let Helms and Christina Applegate...
Even as a cameo, you don't like it.
No. Establish them as a new franchise. And then if that does well and it warrants a sequel, if it warrants another Christmas vacation, then do it as more than a cameo.
So you want to do
it... I think
it,
a cameo cheapens it.
Do you want to do it as like, like your outline for Bourne. Give Renner a movie or two by himself, yes, and then bring Matt Damon back.
Yes.
I can see the logic behind that with Chevy Chase being so linked to that franchise and, you know, Matt Damon being so linked to Bourne that you do kind of want to let the new cast kind of breathe and establish their own. But on the other hand, for something like Vacation, I do think it would be tough to essentially ignore the elephant in the room. You know what I mean? That is Chevy Chase, because he did carry those movies. The kids got switched out all the time.
And I understand that, but you're not asking him to carry this movie. And I...
No.
I guess it's my disdain for the general movie-going public, and I question their intelligence that seeing Chevy Chase show up, because you know he's going to be in a commercial.
Like, they were in Old Navy commercials during Christmas.
I know. So, like, you know they're going to be in the trailer for it, and I just... Give Helms and Applegate a chance first is my thing. If you're going to go with the reboot, give them a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can do both. I think you can have a funny scene with Chevy Chase, literally like 2 to 3 minutes, and that's it. He shows up, you get him for a couple minutes, has a couple lines, and then we don't hear from him for the rest of the movie. I think that would be fine. And then, you know, maybe if you want to bring him back again for Vacation 2, whatever. And I think Ed Helms and Applegate will do well enough that they don't really need the help.
My point.
Right. And I agree with you there. I just think it'd be kind of weird to just completely ignore it. That bothers me. It would bother me probably more, I guess, if they did bring Chevy Chase back and he just kind of sort of just laid there and mailed it in. Our next story might be a little bit of the same, just mailing it in. Tina Fey and Steve Carell's long-awaited project, Mail Order Groom, now postmarked for 2014.
They were in Date Night together.
Sure.
Kind of doubled its budget domestically. So studios want them back together, but they're both pretty busy. So they both have a lot of stuff.
A bit less busy now, not having the regular TV gigs.
Yeah, but I mean, they both have roles coming in.
Sure,
so
yeah.
They pushed it back. I mean, just because of scheduling, it was supposed to, I think they wanted to film it this year, but it's one of those things that I think they're confident enough in it that they could wait a year and those two are still going to be stars.
Yeah. Although, I mean, the most recent efforts from both of them, not so well. Was that Accepted from Tina Fey?
Admission
and Burt Wonderstone
yeah.
did not do all that, but I don't think it's going to kill either.
In between then, you're going to have
Despicable Me 2.
Despicable Me 2, Anchorman 2.
Yeah, whatever she's got going.
She's got some stuff.
I'm sure. Hit Girl's got some stuff going. Hit Girl, Catwoman, and The Rock, well, join Laggies. Chloe Grace Moretz, not Halle Berry, Anne Hathaway, and Sam Rockwell have joined Mark Webber in the cast for Laggies, a dark comedy from Lynn Shelton of Hump Day and Your Sister's Sister.
She's an interesting director. Like, she's a good enough director that I'm interested in what she does. And then you get a cast like this. Yeah. I mean, she tells really good stories. And Your Sister's Sister with Emily Blunt and Mark Duplass was really good. So this one, you know, Anne Hathaway, Mark Webber, who I said I thought his movie was going to shoot him into more leading man type stuff. He proposes to Anne Hathaway, and she freaks out and goes on the run with her sister, who's Hit Girl. So
and very much younger, like that. She kind of regresses and doesn't want.
Yeah, it'll be fun, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Hit Girl do some stuff. I mean, when she was on 30 Rock, I thought she was pretty funny. I've seen Sam Rockwell in some more comedic roles.
Sam Rockwell is built for dark comedy.
Yeah, I thought he was great in Seven Psychopaths. I'm not sure. I guess. About Anne Hathaway. You know what I mean? Like, she's obviously really talented.
Yeah, but this kind of role screams similarities to Rachel getting married.
Yeah.
Where she got nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
So I think she'll be, and she just won an Oscar, so.
Yeah, but that was for something completely different.
Yeah, but I mean, people doubted her in Dark Knight Rises, and I think she was one of the strongest points of that.
She was.
She was one of the biggest question marks going in and one of the highlights leaving.
It's not so much that she was that high. It's just that maybe some of the other stuff was a little bit lower than I thought. I mean, nothing against Anne Hathaway. I think she's fine. I just, if it's a dark comedy that's maybe a bit dry, I think it'd be okay.
Like Rachel Getting Married.
Yeah. I would just worry, like, her trying to yuck it up, because I'm not sure how
well
that
I don't
well
think
it'll
would be like that, though. Like, if you look at Shelton's other movies, I don't think there's a lot of yucking up going on.
Speaking of cats, Caesar finds his kitty. Judy Greer boards Dawn of the Planet of the Apes as Cornelia, a potential love interest for Andy Serkis's Caesar.
Very cool for her. It's a completely motion capture role. I don't really think she's talking yet, so that's just kind of... I love Judy Greer. I think she's fantastic in everything she is. So even her just in a suit bouncing off a circus, I'm excited about. And her husband is, I read a fun quote from her about getting the role, about how her husband is obsessed with Planet of the Apes.
With the original?
Yeah, where she said their wedding, they had apes as the bride and groom.
Yeah, I would say.
And at the reception, they were playing Rise of the Planet of the Apes on one TV and Planet of the Apes on another. So for her to be in this movie is awesome. And I just think she's awesome.
That's another one, a bit like Anchorman, where every time we get a casting update, it seems to be really, really exciting and really good.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for that one. I love the first one. I think it'll be awesome.
Definitely. We mentioned Steve Carell not having his daytime TV gig. Well, not really daytime, not having his TV gig anymore. Apparently, there's a bunch of people from The Office that are going to be out of work. Ryan is now temping at Oscorp. BJ Novak, of course, of The Office, has been confirmed as an Oscorp employee in The Amazing Spider-Man 2 via an Instagram photo from director Mark Webb. And he looked kind of menacing, right?
Yeah, he did.
As menacing as BJ Novak can look.
BJ Novak can look, the guy from Punk'd season 2. I just, what's fun about this to me is, as much hype as around this movie, nobody knew he was in this until Mark Webb put something on Instagram from filming. So this just went completely unnoticed. I think BJ Novak's the kind of name that bloggers jump, because I mean, once that picture went up, it was all over.
Yeah.
So just the fact that as big of a production as that is, and he snuck in without even any fanfare, I thought was...
But that's just got to point to how small his role is going to be.
But still, it'll be fun to see him.
Yeah, it might. It'll be one of those, oh, there he is. Isn't that guy? If you didn't know, you would think, no, there's no way. There's no way. He's just not even saying anything. He doesn't have a speaking role, but there he is. I've not seen any of Nicola Peltz's work. Have you?
She's on Bates Motel right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which I haven't watched. Is it good?
It's okay.
All right.
It's messed up. It's got moments.
Okay.
She's pretty.
That's kind of what I was getting at. I'm sure she is pretty. Michael Bay has an eye for, I guess, talent in that respect, and he has eyed her as his female lead for Transformers 4. She will play a high school senior who gets wrapped up in a war being fought between factions of transforming robot cars with her race car driving boyfriend, Jack Raynor, and his father, Mark Wahlberg.
How old are we that Mark Wahlberg is now the father roles?
Of someone that's in high school, senior in high school.
That's what kills me.
Mark.
That casting made me feel old.
I guess it didn't have quite the same impact on me, but I think I just don't care. I don't care who you cast as the female lead for Transformers. It doesn't.
What I've read makes it seem like she's more the Wiki role than the Megan Fox role.
Sure.
To where she is more the focus than, I don't know.
Than the race car driving,
I really
boyfriend.
Don't care.
That's what I was going to get at.
I
like,
really don't.
How much work do you want to do to figure out?
I saw the first one. I haven't seen any since. I won't see this one. No. I don't care.
I think that's
fair. She's good on Bates Motel, though.
She's pretty.
She's good.
Okay.
It's an okay show. It's worth watching.
I'm using your words.
Yeah.
Okay. So she's pretty. We'll leave it at that. Speaking of pretty chicks, the girl with the sister with the dragon tattoo has landed herself a primo role of her own. Little Sis Rooney, once rumored for, actually, for the female lead in this movie, which eventually went to Rebecca Hall. Big Sis Kate Mara lands a role in Wally Pfister's Transcendence, starring Hall and Johnny Depp.
I am so ridiculously attracted to Kate Mara, and I don't understand why. I think she's
cute.
She's cute, but it's something like it's unhealthy. But she's awesome. I like her in everything I see her in. Rebecca Hall in this kind of role it worries me a little bit. I don't think she's the best there is out there, but she could prove me wrong. She's got some big stuff coming out, but I'm interested in it. Johnny Depp in a non-Burton or Verbinski movie.
Right.
And see what Wally Pfister does.
Yeah, that's the one that's got the quick turnaround. Good for Kate Mara. I was watching her in that Netflix thing, House of Cards.
She's amazing in that.
Yeah, she's really good. So it's good to see her get some work too. And I think that would be hard to be the big sister who's, you know, trying.
She's been around longer.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and then, you know, Rooney shows up and just she's in everything, and that kind of sucks. But good for her. Chinese fans to get their own version of Iron Man 3 to CC. China about to receive their own cut of Iron Man 3. That'll be in Chinese theaters. Not Man's Chinese Theater, actually theaters in China. Featuring an exclusive scene featuring Fan Bingbing, who is also going to be in the X-Men movie. Apparently she's a pretty big
China's biggest actress right now. So there's a cut of Iron Man 3 with her in a scene. And it's only going to be the Chinese cut, so.
Or maybe the extended version.
I'm sure it'll show up on YouTube or on DVD or something, but.
Nothing says Merry Christmas like getting sold into slavery. Fox Searchlight announces a date for Steve McQueen's 12 Years a Slave. It's set to hit theaters December the 27th of this year, released right there in the Oscar sweet spot.
That's enough. Like this. Wolves of Wall Street and what Monument Men, Clooney's other, and then there's a fourth one that American
Bullshit.
Like Oscar heavy hitters that, you know, I don't know. I'm excited for this movie though. This was one of those that when we first started the podcast, there was casting news every week, and every casting news was one of those where it's like, oh, this cast is awesome.
Oh, they got this guy.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Plus Chiwetel Ejiofor in a starring role in a big high profile movie. Yes.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people, and it would take us quite a while to list off everybody, so I'm not going to do it, but...
Fassbender and Ejiofor are enough to get me out.
And a hush puppy, too, I think, right?
She might be.
I think she is. Go to IMDb, check out the cast for 12 Years a Slave. It looks like it's going to be tremendous, and like you said, I think we're going to have a lot of movies. If they all end up coming out, I kind of hope they get pushed around, because... I don't want to have to try and make a decision. I'd rather be able to see one of those each week and not get too far behind, as opposed to on Christmas when I go to see a movie, I have to pick between four movies that I really want to see. That would suck. And everyone would make more money if you stagger them anyway. Isn't that what it's all about anyway? Fox Searchlight also checking into the Grand Budapest Hotel in 2014. They've picked up worldwide distribution rights for the new Wes Anderson flick, and we'll see it next year.
And I'm wondering, Moonrise, I questioned why they did the staggered release, which worked out well for them. I can't see that happening again, though. I really can't. I think riding off of that success, Wes Anderson's a big enough name, and especially with Fox Searchlight involved, I think it goes wide right away.
I would hope so, because it took me forever to see Moonrise Kingdom, and I was not happy with that. I was happy with the movie. It was awesome. But I think you're right. At this point in his career, I think Wes Anderson's got enough that you could release it.
But, I mean, it worked out. It made
did.
A lot of money.
Built some buzz. Sure. Maybe they used that to roll over into this, so you don't have to rebuild the buzz, I guess. But, you know, it would be hard to argue if they did the staggered release again, because it did work so well last time. If it ain't broke... don't fix it. Matthew Vaughn, definitely not a broke dude. Probably got some more money in the bank after 20th Century Fox hires Vaughn's Secret Service for a November 2014 release.
I feel like this is a consolation prize. When he backed out of Days of Future Past, Mark Millar was saying like, oh, it's so we could do Secret Service, which like, I didn't buy that. I said right away, I didn't buy that. And then he gets passed over for Star Wars. Justice League falls apart. They have been working on this for a couple of years. I just don't think it was as high priority for Matthew Vaughn.
You think they fast-tracked it to give him something to do?
Kinda. I think he came back to it. I think it was, I have nothing else to do. I've put a couple years into this, so I might as well do it now and wait for whatever comes next.
Isn't he? He's producing the Trank Fantastic reboot?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess maybe that wasn't enough. I would love to have seen him get a crack at Star Wars. I mean, that he was my...
I mean, they didn't go wrong.
No, they didn't. But I really would like to have seen him get a crack at it.
I'd like to see him get a crack from starting Justice League from the ground up.
Yeah, that's true, too. I mean, this is not a surprise. This is a pretty big Matthew Vaughn house. We both like his stuff a lot. And I can't say that Secret Service really moves the needle for me.
I think it'll be good. Just because of his track record.
Sure, yeah. I there's no reason to believe that it won't be. But I would rather, you know, like you said, have him involved. In the X-Men thing, I was really solid that it was going to be awesome with him. Or, you know, Justice League, I've never been a huge fan of to begin with, but his involvement would make me feel like it'll be
basically
done right.
I know I'll be excited for this movie when it's about to come out. Like, I know the trailer will do something for me. I know but right now, this news just isn't exciting for me. Like, yeah, it's another Matthew Vaughn movie, but it's one that I don't care about, and I don't feel like... I feel like it's a consolation prize. I feel like he's doing it because all these big projects he wanted just aren't happening right now.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm sure, you know, he'll get a crack at something. I mean, he's too good, you know, not to have big projects come his way. A couple folks that were no strangers to good projects passed away this week. Screenwriter Don Payne, who wrote Thor and Thor 2, was also a writer on The Simpsons, and actor Richard Griffiths from the Harry Potter franchise, Gandhi, Hugo, and Pirates 4, both gone this past week.
And we don't report every death, but this Richard Griffiths is one of those that if you see him, you know him. The name probably doesn't register with him, but you've seen a movie he's in.
A bit like Tobolowsky. You might not.
Yeah, he's
you
in
don't
that.
See him.
Yeah, he's in that vein. And then Don Payne, you look at his resume, there's a lot of crap on there, but he was so highly respected, and his name was thrown in there for a lot of big-time projects. Like, he just had the respect, and he had the talent. He made some poor choices along the way, but, I mean, it just... It's sad, and these are both, like, really, really beloved, like, Hollywood people, even though they're not, maybe not household names.
You know, you mentioned the respect. I think having, being a writer on The Simpsons, that is a great thing to have on your resume. That is, I mean, as long as it's been around, it has been consistently one of the best written shows
on television.
Especially
when you transfer into stuff he wrote Thor. And Marvel doesn't always bring people back. They're known to shift, come back and write Thor 2. So, I mean...
It talked about Don Payne being a writer on a couple Marvel movies, which turned out to be pretty good, of course, under the Disney banner, that Thor and Thor 2. The Wolverine, not under Disney's banner, but after watching the trailer that came out this week, I gotta say, I'm more excited about the story than I am anything else. About the movie.
I've been waiting for this trailer because I've had high hopes for this, because everything about it, from the directors that were interested in it, from the script to everything, and the trailer delivered. It doesn't look like X-Men Origins.
No, not at all.
It looks like it's distancing itself from that kind of film. I think it looks awesome.
Yeah, I think it's a more grown-up look at, you know, a superhero that is pretty popular amongst kids.
And it's more the... It's more about the character than about the character being cool and using his claws.
Right.
Like, it looks like there's something more there.
When you look at vampires that live forever and sometimes they don't like that so much, it's kind of the same principle applied to Wolverine.
And that's one thing Logan's always had is not Wolverine's an awesome character.
Sure.
But so is Logan.
Yeah.
And
this movie's called The Wolverine, but it's about Logan.
Yeah, and the origins, really, the Logan that was portrayed there was never really interesting.
Yeah, you would think if you need a different portrayal, we need to switch out the actors. No, Jackman can do it.
He can act. So.
Yeah, if you just had, he has to have a good script. And obviously, Wolverine looks like it has a pretty good script. Watching the trailer for White House Down, I mean, just watching the trailer, I was convinced it was a zombie movie. And I guess if you think about it, coming from the guy that directed Independence Day and 2012,
Day After Tomorrow.
Right. They're all apocalyptic movies. This has a very apocalyptic feel.
It's the same as Olympus Has Fallen. Like, it's just Channing Tatum. I think he takes his daughter to a tour of the White House, and then the White House is taken over, so he's there to protect the president. What I get from this trailer, though, is just like it's screaming, we're not Olympus Has Fallen. Like, it probably, given the director and the plot, it's probably just a dumb action movie. And the Olympus Has Fallen trailer sold it as it's a dumb action movie. This is trying to sell it as not that. Like, it's trying to, it came off like it's trying to sell it as there's more to it, when I really don't know that there is.
No, I don't know either. I can't say that I'm really excited about seeing the movie one way or the other. I am, however, excited about Two Guns. After watching the trailer, though, I do feel like I've seen the whole movie. The trailer was like 3.5 minutes long. It was good to see an appearance from Starship Captain James Olmos. And I have to say that Marky Mark has kind of seemed to have found his groove with buddy heist films, and Pain and Gain coming out.
And the comedic relief.
Yeah.
Like, I love Denzel Washington and these kind of like hardened roles, but he doesn't always, Denzel can crack a joke, but he's hard to when he's playing the kind of characters he kind of gets pigeonholed into. But then you give him Wahlberg to bounce off of. This movie just looks fun.
Yeah, it does.
It just looks like, it looks like the action's going to be awesome. Because, I mean, Wahlberg and Denzel can do action.
Sure.
So I don't doubt that the action will deliver. And it looks, just from the, it's hard to tell from a three, it looks like their chemistry is really good. And, I mean, they're both good actors. It looks just like a lot of fun.
It looks good. I just wish the trailer wouldn't have given away quite as much about the plot.
Yeah.
But you're going to get that in a 3.5-minute trailer.
Yeah, I'm way more excited about this movie than I ever expected to be.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of getting pigeonholed into certain things, Paul Walker must really, really like to drive. Every time you see him in a movie, he's driving his little heart out, and he certainly is in the trailer for Vehicle 19.
This looks terrible.
Yes.
He's in a foreign country. He picks up a car. There's a hooker in it.
I don't think she's a hooker.
I don't know. There's a hostage in it, I guess. And it's him on the run. It looks like Speed in a rental car.
I guess
on the run from foreign police.
Yeah, there might be a little more to it, but to me it just feels like, oh, all right, it's Paul Walker and he's doing more stunt driving. Cool. No stunt driving. Well, maybe there's some. Yeah, actually, there is some stunt driving. It's driving with a golf ball and club in the trailer for Arthur Newman. The trailer is chock full of two things that I love: Emily Blunt and Polaroid cameras.
Yeah, it's Emily Blunt. It's Colin Firth. It just screams feel-good movie. Like, it feels like something that I'm going to leave feeling good about myself.
I hope so. I'll be mad if they don't end up together.
Well, not even just that, but just the whole, like, oh, you could be somebody else. And I think it's going to make me feel good about who I am at the end. And that maybe as much as being somebody else is enticing, maybe I'm meant to be who I am.
Is this either because you're old or because you desperately
it doesn't look good.
Need to get away from your kids?
It doesn't look good is what I'm saying. It just looks too feel-goody to me.
Yeah, but I
do love Emily Blunt. And
that's the
thing. I like Colin Firth, but eh.
I'll probably end up giving it a try just because I like both of them. I can't really say that. I mean, I like Logan Lerman, but I do not see myself giving Percy Jackson 2 a try at all.
The Percy Jackson movies make me mad.
How many of them are there? This is the second one.
Right?
Okay.
The first one, it's terrible. Rick Riordan's the author. He's kind of one-dimensional as an author, and all his stories are very similar. But he tries to be J.K. Rowling, but Rowling writes great material that is good for everybody. Riordan, it's so pigeonholed to, like, teens, young adults, and it's terrible. The first movie was terrible, and it makes me mad because the casts are awesome for these movies. Logan Lerman, I think, is a star. Like, I think he's a movie star.
He can act, that's for sure.
He's fantastic, and still makes me mad he's not Spider-Man, but he deserves better than this. Brandon T. Jackson deserves better than this. Nathan Fillion, like, the casts are good, but I feel like they're wasted in this garbage.
Good casts, terrible CGI. I think we're going from bad to worse on this one. As much as I didn't like the trailer for Percy Jackson 2, before midnight, I really didn't. I
didn't make it through it.
I did. But I will say this. Thank you, trailer, because now I feel like they've rehashed the plot of the first two movies two or three times. So now I definitely don't need to see them.
I don't like the first two. And I'm not interested in the third, but the trailer didn't change my mind at all.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't think either of us won't be the next movie for either of us. Our next trailer is Your Next from Adam Weingart, who was one of the guys from VHS, and I think he had a segment in ABC's of Death, too. One of the ones
it also stars Joe Swanberg, who directed a part in VHS, directed a part in ABC's of Death. I think this is one of the best horror trailers I've seen in a long time. I think it is, as far as horror trailer goes, movie could go either way. As far as cutting together a trailer for a horror movie, this is top notch. This is one of the best horror trailers I have seen in a long, long time.
I think the guy is super talented. Like,
I do too.
He'll be one of those guys when we do our director deathmatch 5 years from now, maybe 10 years from now. He'll definitely be on there. Just based on what he's done to this point, this screams of like a early 80s slasher movie. And it has all of those tropes in it.
It's a lot of guys that, you know, Swanberg stars in it. Ty West is in it. Directed. It's a bunch of these guys that have been doing horror forever. AJ Bowen's in it, who was in The Signal, who was in the first Ty West movie. He's just like in all these horror. It's like they're like the Judd Apatow crew of horror movies, kind of. Where they're sticking together, and you can tell they all love it. It looks really good.
Yeah, like, they do have an appreciation for what they do, and it shows.
I mean, everything, like, just this trailer is, I hate to use the word, it's a perfect trailer for the kind of movie it is. It may not be for everybody. The movie may not be for everybody. But it's a perfect trailer. The music selection, twice, like, it's just how it's set up,
it bookends well,
and the scares in the trailer, it shows enough to get an idea but not enough to really know. I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, I think like old school horror fans are gonna be pretty geeked on it.
It reminds me, I always talk about movies like Sinister and Insidious, how they have good trailers because they're easy to cut. This reminds me of the trailer for like The Strangers. The Strangers was one of the better horror trailers I'd seen in a while.
Yeah.
The movie was garbage, but I don't get the feeling that I trust the guys involved in this enough that I'm not going to get The Strangers.
Yeah, I think that's it.
I hate making that comparison because I don't think it's going to be The Strangers. But if you erase your memory of The Strangers and watch that trailer for the first time, that's a fine horror trailer.
Sure.
It's a fantastic
And this
horror
does trailer. Seem very similar, but there's enough of a established track record from the guys involved that you know it's not going to be like that.
Yeah, it looks... I'm excited for this. This is a good trailer.
Really good trailer. You know, this might be one where if we... spoiler alert, right after we get done with this episode, we're about to record our discussion episode for this week, which is going to be in honor of Evil Dead coming out, our top 10 movies that take place in the woods. This appears to take place in a cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
And, you know, had we done this list next year, I wouldn't be surprised. There. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this movie
makes it on
there.
I know we're speaking it up. Based on the trailer, that's what a trailer should
do. That's all we have to go
on,
yeah.
That a trailer should get me this excited for it, and this is a good trailer.
Yeah, both pumped about that. I would have to say that, obviously, I mentioned the wide release this week is Evil Dead and Jurassic Park in 3D. The trailer for Evil Dead's got me pretty jacked up. I'm looking forward to seeing
that. Me and my girlfriend don't ever get out. I think we're actually getting a sitter and going to see it, just because we're both big fans of the originals, and we both like Jane Levy, so
yeah.
I think I'm actually going to the movies this weekend.
That sounds nice, Dave. Limited release. I don't think any of us are going to be getting a... Although, you might get a sitter to see Trance if you were able to.
I would
to.
See yeah. Simon Killer, Trance, yep. or Upstream Color. I want to see any of these.
Not so much Six Souls. Nobody cares.
No, that movie's been on the shelf forever. Simon Killer, we've talked about it. It looks great. Trance, Danny Boyle. I'm a big fanboy. Upstream Color, Shane Carruth. I don't know what to expect from it, but I know I want to see it.
Fair enough. Won't get a chance to for a while, but you will. Essentially, this week, Evil Dead comes out. Jurassic Park, you're not going to watch in 3D, but we are going to watch it in regular old 2D for our discussion episode next week. We're going to talk Jurassic Park. That's right, right?
Yeah.
That's
what I thought. I'll tease it again at the end because I'll go over a couple other things. But
fair enough. Jurassic Park, I believe, came out on DVD and Blu-ray last week.
Yes.
This week, not a lot. John dies at the end and the Sweeney. That's about it.
John dies at the end was fun. I don't know if it's an owner. It's really fun. The Sweeney, I'm excited for. Sweeney's one of those trailers that I watch and it's like, oh, that's a me movie. So
if you are not going to be able to go out and see Evil Dead or Jurassic Park this weekend, maybe John Dies at the End is your pick of the week for something to watch on DVD or Netflix. Maybe it's not.
This is one of those weeks I have a ton.
Okay.
Like I would say the Sweeney because I want to see it. I almost said Matt Stickman earlier because we were talking about Sam Rockwell.
Sure.
But I'm going to give two because I do that.
Okay.
From 1987, Critical Condition. Starring Richard Pryor.
Okay.
To me, it's one of his, I mean, people know the toy, like his.
Yeah.
This is
Superman.
This is one of my favorite just Richard Pryor movies. And then one of my favorite Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder movies from 1980, Stir Crazy. I think that's like the epitome of one of their movies. So both of those, because I got excited talking about Richard Pryor earlier.
Yeah, I got so excited. I didn't change my watch this from last week. It just, I mentioned in our trailer section how much I love Emily Blunt, and this just happens, I guess, last week I said you guys should watch an Emily Blunt movie, The 5-Year Engagement, which you should still watch. It's pretty good. I'm going to stick with the Richard Pryor thing, and I'm just going to go watch his comedy special live from the Sunset Strip. It's awesome.
Or listen to any of his albums.
Yeah, or that too, but I know it had been streaming on Netflix for a long time. It was one of those things that I had seen it like four or five times, but I always keep it in my instant queue just because there'll be some nights when I can't pick anything and I will put that on and it's so funny. The guy's absolutely brilliant.
He's one of the best stand-ups ever. And I mean, what he did was awesome. And that's why I won't go back to, but I want that movie to happen.
He deserves it at the very least.
Later this week.
Yeah.
Ryan teased it earlier. We're doing our top 10 movies that take place in the woods. We usually do a top five, but when I started doing it, it's like, there's a lot. You could fill the list with just horror, and I didn't want to do just horror. So we ended up doing top 10 that take place in the woods. That'll be later this week. And then next week, we're going to watch Jurassic Park. Ryan has seen it recently.
More recently than you have.
More recently. I saw it when it came out, and I haven't seen it since. So I am making a list of five moments that I like that I forgot about. So I'm kind of watching it fresh. Like, I know enough about it.
See it again for the first time.
Yeah. So if you want to watch it and you haven't watched it in forever, make a list similar to that and email it to us at moviesonup.com or moviesonup@gmail.com.
Yeah, I'm sure you could do something.
Which you can find the email address at moviesonup.com.
Sure. Check that out because it's been redesigned. It's pretty sweet now. We've got some new artwork that's pretty awesome and a new layout. Let us know if you guys are digging that. We did get a comment about we need to redo our website, and Dave took 13 minutes and redid our website, and I think it looks pretty sweet now. So
I don't know if it counts because it's still pretty simple, but I like simplicity and functionality, and
that's true. You do, you really into the Spartan web design.
Yeah,
sure.
But Jimmy Cole did our new logo. It's our new iTunes logo. It's our new Facebook, yeah. Twitter, everything. And
thanks again, Jimmy Cole.
I really love it.
Appreciate it. Check out our show that we're going to have coming up on later on this week, depending on when the Cavs play. It'll be when I get around to editing. It'll be up probably Wednesday night or Thursday night. Check that out. Leave us an iTunes review. Let us know what you think of the 2-episode-a-week format.
Also, we are now on Stitcher.
Nice.
We're now on Stitcher Radio, the mobile app. I know a lot of people use that for their podcasts. You can search us and find us. We are now on Stitcher.
So we're twice as legit as we were before. Twice as legit, twice as many episodes. And until that very next episode,
keep it up.